We're back now on this Agriculture Today. Of course, at the forefront, regularly if not daily, the status of U.S. trade policy, and agriculture has a huge stake in that, as you know. We wanted to tap the thoughts of an agricultural economist here at K-State who's very well attuned to international trade matters, Vincent Amanor-Boadu, and his observations of where we're at, where we may be going with our trade approaches in the U.S., particularly with respect to agriculture. But Vincent, in the last 6 months with the new administration in place, the tone of U.S. trade policy comments seems to have changed a bit. How do you read all this?
Well, I think there are two things that we have to be cognizant of, Eric. During the campaign, we heard a lot about how trade has been bad for the United States. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was based on trade deficit situation without actually looking at the total separation of industries and also on exports and imports, because they have different effects. Exports are good for producers, for sellers. Imports are good for consumers. And those two are not necessarily the same. So when you look at the balance of your trade, your export trade, and you say it's negative, and that drives how you are going to deal with your trade policy, you are either going to reward one group and punish the other, and neither is going to be good for you. Because when you put trade barriers up, you are punishing your exporters, and you are also punishing your consumers. And that is why, in general, opening borders and allowing goods to flow has always been a good thing, regardless of how we look at it. So what we really need is certainty in the policy environment and also confidence that, you know, people can make investment decisions and expect the environment to sustain the assumptions under which they make those decisions.
That said, the agricultural community, as you well know, has been somewhat concerned, if not outright fearful, about the prospect of reopening and renegotiating the North American Free Trade Agreement. That's been center stage for some time now. The administration is moving in that direction. There have been some statements as to the points of renegotiation that might be taken up. Where are we with NAFTA? And moreover, does agriculture have a lot to fear here?
Well, we haven't moved much. I mean, there's been a lot more talk than action. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot more talk probably here at home than between us and our partners. But what we know is that the Canadians and the Mexicans are prepping for not necessarily renegotiating, because remember that right now, the global market space, the U.S. in that space is just one country. Both Mexico and Canada are very large trade partners for the United States and vice versa. The critical thing is, what are they going to do if they don't like the agreement in place or the agreement that we are looking at bringing up? They have a broader market. Right. And that is the thinking that is going on when you talk to the Canadians and the Mexicans. Mm-hmm. They are looking at entering alternative markets and building those relationships without putting their confidence in the United States as a market. So then that means that for our exports, right, because it's going to be bilateral. So if they are looking for alternative markets, it means that whatever that barriers we are putting in place, and that's the interesting thing in trade, what is good for the goose is always good for the gander. So when you put a barrier in place and say, I don't want this, it automatically flips and says, okay, then you won't do the same thing, right? So we have to look at our trade and say, okay, where is U.S., at least Kansas farm products going? And how is any change that we think is going to benefit the automobile industry or benefit the air conditioning industry, how is that going to translate in its effect on agriculture?
Is there relevance from those non-agricultural goods that might spill over and
exactly
impact agriculture?
Exactly. Because when you start trying to balance trade, it means that the winners have to give up part of their wins to support the losers. And I put those in quotes because American consumers are saying, we like these products from this particular place better than we like the ones that we are making here. And that is why imports are coming in, right? And foreign consumers are saying, we like American food products better, and that's why they are importing our products. So when you look at the balance and you say, well, German cars are coming into United States and a Mercedes is more expensive than wheat. So if the balance is not adding up and you are going to try and prevent German cars from coming, and in the process, Germans prevent wheat from going out, then it means that wheat farmers are now trying, you know, are being made to subsidize the inefficiencies in the luxury market of the United States. That is something that I think, you know, agriculture should be worried about, because so far we have been okay, you know, in our trade balance situation because we are the most efficient. And to make us support the inefficiencies of other industries because we are looking at the total sum and the net situation, I think is punishing agriculture, and we shouldn't take that.
More broadly, there's been, again, some debate and discussion over the posture of bilateral trade agreements versus multilateral trade agreements, whether or not agriculture benefits with bilateral vis-a-vis multilateral agreements. That's very much at the core of this as well, isn't
it? Yes, and we have to be careful because, you know, multilateral is multiple bilaterals. That's what it is. So let's take the situation we have right now where Japan has agreements with Australia, right, that are more favorable than the agreement with us. Okay, so the Australians can land their beef and their wines in Japan with lower tariff rates than we can. In a multilateral arrangement, we get the best of the most favored nation treatment, mm-hmm. right? So the challenge here is we can do as many bilateral arrangements as we want. The cost of managing those agreements are high because you are doing one-on-one over and over and over again, and you are negotiating the same thing with a number of people, and the conditions are different, and somebody wants this and somebody doesn't want that. And in the end, when it comes to any product, we are competing with everybody else, right? So in the case that we are looking at, where Australia has been able to negotiate a better arrangement with Japan on beef than we have, then what happens is U.S. beef is entering Japan with a higher tariff than Australian beef. The Japanese consumer is looking at the beef and saying, this one is more expensive than that one. I can't see the difference, and therefore I'm buying the cheaper one. That's the risk of getting into these bilateral agreements, because you are trading specific products in your agreements instead of having more like an overall perspective and balancing things together. So if we are, you know, if negotiating with Japan and Japan is looking at the automobile market, we are going to sacrifice some other market in favor of the automobile market. But Japan is a very important agricultural market for us. Mm-hmm. So in order to get a better deal with Japan, you have technically use agriculture as a scapegoat. And those are my concerns about bilateral arrangements, because you cannot get the best agreement that allows you to get the most favored treatment across all your trade treatments. And you'll be competing, regardless of what agreement you have in place, you'll be competing with everybody else in any of the markets that you go in.
So in conclusion, before we could talk many, many more angles here, your feeling and sense of the situation at hand. There was considerable worry several months ago about the policy direction. Is that same concern still in play?
I think it is. I think it is. And the only, you know, the advice that I'll sort of present to negotiators and all that is the fallacy of using net trade as the metric of measurement. And in all fairness, a lot of these agreements that we are looking at changing have been negotiated by people who actually are no less patriotic and understood the issues. we know for sure that our partners don't like certain parts of the agreement. So all of a sudden, everything is up for grabs. And who is going to pay for that uncertainty? And that's the concern that I worry about for Kansas agriculture and food industries. Because we depend so much on exports, I don't want a situation where agriculture and food is sacrificed for another part of the economy.
Well stated. And this will be very much on the front burner for months, if not years, it would appear. The state of agricultural trade and how current policy approaches might affect our trade successes. And Vincent, as always, we appreciate your comments and your insight. Thank you for coming over.
Thank you, Eric.
Agricultural economist, Kansas State University, Vincent Amanor-Boadu has been our guest on this part of Agriculture Today.